Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the one, the only Sean Sports Talk podcast, where the one and only Sean reports the biggest news in sports and gives his unique and captivating opinion on everything going on. And with all that said, let's get right into it. We got plenty of NFL. This is definitely a football focused episode, I would say, with, you know, the NFL playoffs rounding third, so to speak, transitioning into the conference championship games, the NFC and AFC championship games. Simultaneously, you have most of the NFL, you have the non-playoff teams, which constitutes most of the NFL, making coaching changes, firings, hirings, interviews, all of that good stuff. So we're not going to waste any time here. We're going to get right into it, starting with just a recap of the NFL playoffs thus far. Starting the wild card round, we're going to start off with the Houston Texans, who surprisingly pummeled the Cleveland Browns at home 45-14. Both teams had a total record of 11-7 after this matchup. CJ Stroud, the rookie phenom, balled out, went 16 of 21, 274 yards, 3 touchdowns. What a stud he is. And he did that, put up those numbers and as a rookie in his first ever playoff game without one of his star wide receivers, Tank Dell. So what a game from him. On the running side of things for the Texans, it was pretty much only Devin Singletary who carried the ball 13 times for 66 yards. That's just over 5 yards a rush and a rushing touchdown. So he was serviceable, no doubt. Nico Collins, I mean, he absolutely led the way receiving-wise for the Texans. 6 receptions for 96 yards. That's an average of 16 yards per reception and a receiving touchdown as well. Brevin Jordan had only 1 reception, but it was a 76-yard touchdown. Definitely an electric play, to say the least, for the Texans. And Dalton Schultz, similarly, only had 1 reception, but it was a 37-yard touchdown grab. For the Browns, the magic of Joe Flacco, wouldn't say ran out, but not the best performance from him. He threw the ball 46 times, completed, 34 completions, 371 yards, but 1 touchdown and 2 interceptions. Matter of fact, both of the interceptions were pick sixes, so pretty horrible from him there on that front. No running game for the Browns at all. I mean, Kareem Hunt, 8 carries, 26 yards. That's barely over 3 yards a carry. He did have a rushing touchdown, though. Jerome Ford, 9 carries for 17 yards. That is less than 2 yards a carry, 1.9 yards a carry. And Joe Flacco, the corpse of Joe Flacco, rushed 3 times for 13 yards. That's just over 4 yards a carry. Receiving-wise, unsurprisingly, David Njoku, 7 receptions, 93 yards, over 13 yards a reception. Harrison Bryant had a great game as well, as he hauled in 4 receptions for 65 yards. Amari Cooper, excuse me, still coming off of sickness. Amari Cooper, for his standards, had a bit of a quiet game, only 4 receptions for 59 yards. That is, however, almost 15 yards a reception, so the Texans moved on to the divisional round. Next up, no surprise at all, the Kansas City Chiefs took care of business against the Miami Dolphins at home. I wouldn't necessarily call the Dolphins frauds because they were never thought of legitimate Super Bowl contenders other than maybe very, very early on in the season, but it became very apparent that they had 0 wins over playoff teams. And, they only proved that narrative, losing 26-7 to the Kansas City Chiefs on the road. Obviously, the Dolphins are from Miami, Florida. It's never cold there. Certainly not how it is in Kansas City, Missouri. So Patrick Mahomes led the way for the Chiefs. He went 23 of 41 for 262 yards, only 1 passing touchdown, but that was more than enough for the Chiefs. Isaiah Pacheco carried the ball 24 times, but for only 89 yards, 3.7 yards a rush. He did have a rushing touchdown, though. Patrick Mahomes rushed only twice, but picked up 41 yards on the ground. That's 20 and a half yards per carry. Rashee Rice, the rookie phenom for the Chiefs, 8 receptions, 130 yards. That's over 16 yards a reception and a receiving touchdown. Travis Kelce, solid game, nothing too crazy. 7 receptions, 71 yards, 10 yards a reception. And that was pretty much it on the receiving front from the Chiefs. For the Dolphins, Tua Tagovailoa had a game to forget. 20 of 39, which is, just ever so slightly better than only 50% completion percentage. 199 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. Raheem Mostert did nothing on the ground, 8 rushes for 33 yards, 2 of 3 rushes for 25 yards. Davon Achane, what a shit game for him. 6 rushes, 9 yards, that is 1.5 yards a rush, absolutely horrible. Tyreek Hill had a quiet game in his return to Arrowhead. I thought he would have a much bigger game. He did have a receiving touchdown, but only 5 receptions for 62 yards. That's 12.5 yards a reception. So just not enough volume to Tyreek Hill. Jalen Waddle, you know, might as well have been a ghost. Two receptions, 31 yards. Daywon Ashani put up almost the same receiving numbers as Jalen Waddle. That is inexcusable for the Miami Dolphins. Speaking of inexcusable, how about them Cowboys? They got absolutely thumped at home, where they have been so good this whole season. 48-32 by the Green Bay Packers. Jordan Love, what a game. Have a game, Jordan Love. He, in this game, Jordan Love, 16 of 21, 272 yards, 3 passing touchdowns, 0 interceptions. He had a higher QBR than any quarterback in Packers postseason history. That obviously includes the GOAT himself, Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Jones had a game, 21 carries, 118 yards. That's 5.6 yards a carry, which is solid. And he had 3 rushing touchdowns. So Jordan Love with 3 passing touchdowns, Aaron Jones with 3 rushing touchdowns. Absolute domination by the Packers. Romeo Doubs, 6 receptions, 151 yards and a touchdown. That is over 25 yards a reception and a receiving touchdown. Luke Musgrave, 3 receptions, 52 yards and a touchdown. Dontavion Wicks, 2 receptions, 25 yards and a touchdown. Now the Cowboys. Dak Prescott probably had the worst 400-yard, 3-touchdown game of all time. He threw the ball 60 times with 41 completions, 403 yards, 3 touchdowns, but 2 interceptions as well. Tony Pollard was a ghost, 15 rushes, 56 yards, under 4 yards a rush. Did have a rushing touchdown though. Dak Prescott with 45 yards on the ground, over 6 rushes, that's 7.5 yards per attempt. Receiving, CeeDee Lamb had a huge game, as he always does, 9 receptions, 110 yards. Michael Gallup did as well, 6 receptions, 103 yards. Jake Ferguson, the tight end, 10 receptions, 93 yards. But that's pretty much it. I mean, Brandon Cook, 6 receptions for 47 yards. After that, there was nothing else. So shout out to the Packers. Cowboys choke again. What was probably the most exciting matchup of the wild card round was the Los Angeles Rams at the Detroit Lions. Matthew Stafford, making his long-awaited return to Detroit. Jared Goff facing off against the team that essentially gave up on him and traded him for Stafford. This truly turned out to be a win-win trade. Obviously, the Los Angeles Rams winning the Super Bowl in the first season after the trade with Matthew Stafford as the starting quarterback. And now the Detroit Lions, only a couple years removed from the trade, as I'll mention in a second, they're currently in the NFC Championship game. So they edged out the Los Angeles Rams 24-23 by 1 point at home. I do feel like the referees screwed the Rams over quite a bit. But nonetheless, I have no animosity toward the Detroit Lions. I respect them as a team. I respect most of their players. Not that piece of shit that took out, with the dirty hit on our tight end, Tyler Higbee, which ultimately tore his ACL. Fuck that guy. But overall, I respect the Detroit Lions, the fans, the city, you know, everything. Starting with Matthew Stafford and the Rams, I mean, he balled out. He took the booze personal, it looks like. Stafford went 25 of 36 for 367 yards, two passing touchdowns, 0 interceptions. Kyren Williams, unfortunately, did not have the kind of game that he usually has and Rams fans love to see him have. He rushed 13 times for only 61 yards. Well, you know, that's under 5 yards a carry, so not great from him. But the Lions' run defense is known as elite. It's top 3 in the NFL, possibly even top 2. Puka Nacua, the rookie phenom for the Rams, I mean, what a game. And he was still hard on himself after the game. That shows you how much he cares, how much he values his teammates, you know, the games and everything else. Puka Nacua, 9 receptions, 181 yards, and a receiving touchdown. He had 9 receptions, and he averaged over 20 yards a reception. That is unbelievable to do so as a 5th-round rookie in his first playoff game. It is unreal. I truly believe he should be the offensive rookie of the year over CJ Stroud. I mean, despite how much of a stud Stroud is, Puka Nacua to be doing this as a 5th-round pick is unbelievable. Tutu Atwell, you know, a very Tutu Atwell-like game. Only 1 reception, but it was a 38-yard touchdown, and he had a very stylish flip into the end zone. DeMarcus Robinson has been a bit of a revelation for the Rams, as he hauled in 3 receptions for 44 yards. Ronnie Rivers, a backup running back, had 3 receptions for 35 yards. Davis Allen, the backup tight end, 2 receptions, 28 yards. Kyren Williams, the main running back, 1 reception, 9 yards. Ben Skowronek, 1 reception, 5 yards. Tyler Higbee, no receptions, no yards, no touchdowns, and a torn ACL. I feel so bad for him, but hopefully he'll be back stronger than ever. Excuse me. We don't edit anything out on this show. It's unfiltered, unedited. Cooper Kupp, the star wide receiver, the triple crown winner of only 2 years ago when the Rams won the Super Bowl, was limited to only 5 receptions for 27 yards. When you limit someone like Cooper Kupp to only 27 yards and only 5.4 yards a reception, only 5 receptions, you should win this game. The Lions won the game. As a diehard Rams fan, if we had just not even normal production, but just a little bit more production from Cooper Kupp and or Kyren Williams, we win this game. On top of the fact that we should have won this game regardless, but the referees screwed the Rams over. Nonetheless, the Lions, proved to be worthy, as we'll mention in a second. Next up, the Buffalo Bills, did what they were supposed to do, taking care of the Pittsburgh Steelers at home 31-17. The Steelers didn't have TJ Watt, so, I respect them for keeping it fairly competitive, but they never had any chance to win this game. Mason Rudolph had a solid game for the Steelers, all things considered, 22 of 39, 229 yards, 2 touchdowns, and an interception. Jaylen Warren had a game to forget on the ground, only 8 carries for only 38 yards, under 5 yards a carry. Kyren Williams-esque, I would say. And Najee Harris had an even worse game somehow. He got the ball 12 times, rushed for only 37 yards. That is barely 3 yards a carry. Absolutely horrible from Najee Harris. Pat Freiermuth was solid, 5 receptions, 76 yards. George Pickens, 5 receptions, 50 yards. Deontay Johnson, 4 receptions, 48 yards. But that was pretty much it as far as the Steelers' offense. Can't say the same for the Bills, as Josh Allen went 21 of 30 for only 203 yards, but he did throw 3 passing touchdowns. James Cook didn't do all that much on the ground, 18 carries, 79 yards, 4.4 yards a carry. Josh Allen did, however, 8 carries, 74 yards, that's 9.2 yards a carry, and a rushing touchdown for Josh Allen. So 4 all-purpose touchdowns for Josh Allen. Dalton Kincaid, the lead receiver for the Bills, who would have thought, 3 receptions, 59 yards, and a touchdown. Stephon Diggs, 7 receptions, 52 yards. Khalil Shakir, 3 receptions, 31 yards, and a touchdown. And Dawson Knox, Josh Allen's favorite, one of his favorite targets. Only 1 reception, but it was a 9-yard touchdown grab. And the last wildcard round matchup, I had no doubt that this would happen. The Philadelphia Eagles' collapse is complete as they fall in the wildcard round on the road to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 32-9. They got blown out. Jalen Hurts was solid. I mean, you can't even say that he wasn't solid. 25 of 35, 250 yards, only 1 passing touchdown, but 0 interceptions. DeAndre Swift, shockingly, Jalen Hurts, the star rushing quarterback for the Eagles, only had 1 carry for 5 yards. That is unbelievable. DeAndre Swift, their starting running back, also had a game to forget, to say the least, as he ran the ball 10 times for only 34 yards. That is pretty bad. And Kenneth Gainwell was significantly worse, as he rushed 4 times for 3 yards. That is less than 1 yard a carry. Devontae Smith had a huge game with no A.J. Brown in the picture. 8 receptions, 148 yards. That is 18.5 yards a reception. DeAndre Swift, 4 receptions, 32 yards. Julio Jones, 3 receptions, 22 yards against his former team. Dallas Goedert, 4 receptions, 21 yards. So just a very quiet game from the Eagles all around. Not for the Buccaneers, though, as Baker Mayfield went 22 of 36, threw for 337 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, a flawless game from Baker Mayfield. Rashad White had a decently solid game, rushing 18 carries, 72 yards, 4 yards a carry. Kate Otten led the way for the Buccaneers, 8 receptions, 89 yards. Mike Evans, 3 receptions, 48 yards. Chris Godwin, 4 receptions, 45 yards and a touchdown. Now let us now transition to the divisional round. First off, the one-seeded Baltimore Ravens hosting the Cinderella run surging Houston Texans, but they took care of business. They stood on business at home, winning convincingly 34-10. CJ Stroud, not a bad game, but he was just shut down by the Ravens defense. 19 of 33, 175 yards, no touchdowns and no interceptions. Nothing to write home about at all when it comes to the rushing front from the Texans in this game. Devin Singletary, 9 carries for 22 yards. CJ Stroud, 3 carries for 9 yards. Receiving, Nico Collins, 5 receptions, 68 yards. Devin Singletary, 5 receptions, 48 yards. Dalton Schultz, 5 receptions, 43 yards. And that is literally it for the Texans offense. Can't say the same for the Ravens, as Lamar Jackson was very accurate, going 16 of 22 for 152 yards. Not the most passing yards, but 2 passing touchdowns, no interceptions. On the ground, however, he rushed 11 times for 100 yards. That is over 9 yards a rush and 2 rushing touchdowns as well for Mr. Lamar Jackson. Zay Flowers, 4 receptions, 41 yards. Rashad Bateman, 3 receptions, 39 yards. Isaiah Likely, 2 receptions, 34 yards and a touchdown. Nelson Aguilar, 2 receptions, 12 yards and a touchdown. And Odell Beckham Jr., 1 reception for 12 yards. Next up, did not think this game would be that close. I thought the Niners would run away with it. The Niners survive at home against the Green Bay Packers 24-21. Let's look at the player stats. Jordan Love had not as good of a game as against the Cowboys, but still respectable. 21 of 34, 194 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 2 interceptions. The 2 touchdowns were caught by Bo Melton and Tucker Kraft. For the Niners, Brock Purdy was exceptional. 23 of 39, 252 yards, a touchdown, and no interceptions. Christian McCaffrey did Christian McCaffrey things, rushing 17 times for 98 yards. That's 5.8 yards a rush and 2 rushing touchdowns as well. George Kittle caught the only receiving touchdown for the 49ers as he hauled in 4 receptions and 81 yards, one of which was a touchdown grab. The Detroit Lions, like I mentioned, took care of business at home to advance to the NFC Championship game against the 49ers. They won a close game against the Buccaneers, 31-23. Baker Mayfield balled out again, but the interceptions cost him this time around. He threw the ball for 41 times. 26 out of those 41 were completions, 349 yards, 3 touchdowns, but 2 interceptions. Not much to speak of when it comes to the running game of the Buccaneers. Mike Evans went off, 8 receptions, 147 yards, and a touchdown. That is 18.5 yards a reception. Cade Otton had a great game again, 5 receptions, 65 yards, and a touchdown. And Rashad White, 4 receptions, 36 yards, and a touchdown. Chris Godwin was solid as well, 4 receptions for 40 yards. And lastly, the Buffalo Bills cannot exercise the demons from Kansas City, Missouri. The Kansas City Chiefs once again, yet again, beat the Buffalo Bills in the playoffs. This time in Buffalo, Patrick Mahomes, 17 of 23, 215 yards and 2 touchdowns. Rushing, Isaiah Pacheco had a great game, 15 rushes for 97 yards, that's 6.5 yards a rush, and a rushing touchdown as well. Travis Kelce had a much more Travis Kelce-esque game. 5 receptions, 75 yards, 15 yards a reception, 2 receiving touchdowns. So Travis Kelce hauled in both receiving touchdowns from Patrick Mahomes. So the NFL Conference Championship matchups are set. Sunday, January 28th at 12 p.m. Pacific time, the Kansas City Chiefs are at the Baltimore Ravens with a trip to the Super Bowl on the line. I will be cheering for the Ravens in this game, and I believe they win with their stellar defense, home field advantage. I think they advance to the Super Bowl. And lastly, the NFC Championship, the 14-5 Detroit Lions at the 13-5 San Francisco 49ers. I was wondering while I was saying that why the Lions have played one more game, but that is because the Niners were the one seed in the NFC and received a first round wild card round bye. I think the Lions win this game and set up a Super Bowl matchup with the Ravens, Detroit versus Baltimore. That is my prediction. I think Jared Goff walks into San Francisco and balls the fuck out. I think the former Ram, the first LA Rams quarterback to lead the LA Rams to the Super Bowl since the greatest show on turf, since the Rams moved back to LA from St. Louis, Jared Goff, a Rams legend as far as I'm concerned, unironically, despite sending us home to this year in the playoffs, I think he beats the Niners. So that has been your NFL playoff recap. It took almost 20 minutes, but let us now talk about some more NFL. Josh Allen didn't put the blame on Buffalo Bills kicker Tyler Bass after he missed a potentially game-tying field goal against the Kansas City Chiefs in the divisional round of the NFL playoffs on Sunday night. The Bills quarterback knows it was up to the entire team to get it into a situation to win the game, and that the missed field goal alone is not the reason for the 27-24 loss, saying, "It wouldn't have been put in that situation. You win as a team, you lose as a team," Allen said after the game. "One play doesn't define a game. It doesn't define a season. People are going to be out there saying that. We got to be there for him because, again, we execute a couple plays prior, and I'm probably singing a different tune right now." Bass's 44-yard field goal attempt was wide right, and after the game, Allen comforted his kicker. While he didn't blame Bass for the loss, Allen didn't sugarcoat the feeling of losing to the Chiefs yet again and coming up short in the playoffs yet again, saying, "It sucks, losing sucks, losing to them, losing to anybody at home sucks." The loss marks the third time in 4 seasons that the Bills season has been ended by Kansas City. Buffalo has been on the cusp of a Super Bowl appearance over the past few years, but the Bills have not been able to get over that hump. Having to face the Chiefs almost every single playoffs certainly doesn't help that cause. I do feel bad for the kicker. I mean, despite what Josh Allen says, people will blame the kicker. Is it deserved? That's a different discussion. I don't really think it is, but, you know, the kickers have an immense amount of pressure on them. Let us now switch gears to more NFL. I never could have thought that I would see the day that the Detroit Lions are a destination for ring chasers. I never would have thought. After veteran tight end Zach Ertz parted ways with the Arizona Cardinals on November 30th, he has finally found a new home. According to the NFL Network, on Monday, Ertz will sign with the Detroit Lions. The 33-year-old will start on the Detroit's practice squad, but it was noted there are plans to potentially elevate him for the NFC Championship game. Per ESPN, Ertz's departure from Arizona was a mutual decision by him and the team to give him the chance to finish the season elsewhere. Ertz's friend and former teammate J.J. Watt reported that the tight end requested his release because he plans to sign with his contender and make a run at his second Super Bowl ring. He's a three-time Pro Bowler. He won his first Super Bowl with the Philadelphia Eagles in 2017. The 11-year veteran spent his first 9-plus seasons in Philadelphia before being traded to the Cardinals during the 2021 season. He signed a 3-year, $31.65 million extension with the Cardinals prior to the 2022 season, but he suffered a season-ending knee injury that year. Ertz has also been hampered by a quad injury this season and was placed on injured reserve on October 24th and was eligible to return after 4 weeks, but the Cardinals did not open his practice window before waiving him. Before he went down, he appeared in 7 games for Arizona and recorded 27 catches for 187 yards and 1 touchdown. Adding Ertz is a great move for the Lions, in my opinion. Sam Laporta is playing, but he's playing through an injury, and their backup tight end got injured in the Buccaneers matchup as well. We got more football to talk about. After being fired as head coach of the Washington Commanders, Ron Rivera is reportedly in the running for a different role with a rival team. According to Jeremy Fowler of ESPN, Rivera is set to interview with the Philadelphia Eagles for their defensive coordinator opening after the team recently parted ways with Sean Desai and Matt Patricia. Ian Rappaport of NFL Network reported on Sunday that the Eagles head coach Nick Sirianni let go of Desai, who served as the team's defensive coordinator, but lost play calling duties late in the season. Patricia, who signed a 1-year deal to be a senior defensive assistant and took over the play calling from Desai, did not have his contract renewed at the end of the year. The Eagles' defense played a significant role in their late season collapse that saw them lose 5 of their last 6 games after starting the year with a 10-1 record. Philadelphia ranked 26th in the NFL with 356.1 yards allowed per game, but the team struggles reached new heights later in the year. So perhaps Ron Rivera will be the next defensive coordinator of the Philadelphia Eagles. We will have to wait and see. We got more football to talk about. I wasn't lying when I said that this would be a football-heavy episode. The Carolina Panthers announced Monday that former assistant general manager Dan Morgan has been promoted to president of football operations and general manager, replacing Scott Fitterer. Dan has a thorough knowledge of our football personnel and a clear vision to take us where we all want to go, owner David Tepper said. We know he will attack this opportunity with the same intensity he did as a Panthers player. The Athletic reported that the 45-year-old is expected to handle the personnel side of football operations, while Kansas City Chiefs Vice President of Football Operations Brandon Tillis, who the Panthers previously interviewed for their general manager vacancy, remains a candidate to handle the salary cap and business side of the operation if hired. Morgan has a lengthy NFL resume. He started his playing career with the Panthers in 2001 after being a first-round pick by the team and spent 7 seasons with them, registering 390 tackles and 5 interceptions in his career. He was a Pro Bowler in 2007, and the highlight of his career came in the Super Bowl when he registered an incredible 25 tackles. But he struggled with injuries and concussions throughout his career, eventually causing him to retire at only 29 years old. Morgan transitioned into a scouting role in 2010 as an intern with the Seattle Seahawks and eventually ascended to that organization's director of pro personnel, a role that he held between 2015 and 2017. He joined the Buffalo Bills in 2018 as director of player personnel and returned to Carolina in 2021 as Fitterer's assistant general manager. Morgan is now the third GM under Tepper's ownership, following in the footsteps of longtime team executive Marty Herney and Fitterer. His first decision will be a huge one as he spearheads the effort to hire a new head coach after the team's disastrous 1-16 season. Morgan is not inherently an easy rebuilding effort. Quarterback Bryce Young did not look good in his rookie season, and the Panthers don't have a first-round pick in this year's draft after trading up to select him last season. But I wouldn't give up on Bryce Young just yet. I mean, plenty of rookie quarterbacks struggled in their rookie year. I mean, Jared Goff, Tom Brady. Who was I thinking of? Jared Goff, Tom Brady, Trevor Lawrence. I mean, plenty of guys have transitioning to more NFL. The Tennessee Titans reportedly plan to hire Cincinnati Bengals offensive coordinator Brian Callahan as their next head coach. The 39-year-old just finished his fifth season as the Bengals OC. He came aboard with Zach Taylor when the latter took the Cincinnati head coaching job. Callahan has 13 years of NFL coaching experience, beginning in 2010 when he served as a Denver Broncos coaching assistant. He stayed in Denver through its Super Bowl winning 2015 season before going to the Detroit Lions to become their quarterbacks coach for 2016 and 2017. He assumed the same position with the Oakland Raiders in 2018 before moving on to Cincinnati. Tennessee parted ways with former head coach Mike Vrabel after six seasons on January 9th. The decision was made by Titans owner Amy Adams Strunk, who explained why she decided to let go of Vrabel. The Titans enjoyed six straight winning seasons from 2016 to 2021, including even an AFC Championship game appearance in 2019 and a pair of AFC South titles in 2020 and 2021. Tennessee looked like it was on its way to another winning season in 2022 after a 7-3 start, but the team endured seven straight losses to end the season. Then the bottom fell out in 2023 with the Titans going 6-11 and finishing last in the AFC South. A poor offensive effort was ultimately the culprit. Despite the Titans sporting running back Derrick Henry and wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins, they finished 27th out of 32 NFL teams in scoring. Fixing the offense should be the top priority for Callahan. Tennessee potentially has a quarterback to build around in 2023 second-round pick Will Levis, who had some impressive showings, you know, case in point, four touchdowns against the Atlanta Falcons in his debut, a career-high 327 passing yards in an upset win over the Miami Dolphins. However, Derrick Henry is an impending free agent, so that will need to be figured out. Let us now switch gears to something interesting, really interesting here. Legendary WWE superstar Dwayne The Rock Johnson was named a member of the TKO Group Holdings Board of Directors on Tuesday. TKO, which is the name of the company formed by the WWE-UFC merger, also added another board member in Brad Keywell, bringing the number of board members from 11 to 13. In a press release distributed by TKO, Johnson divulged that he has also taken full ownership of the trademark for his nickname, The Rock, as part of the agreement, saying, "My grandfather, High Chief Peter Maivia, and my dad, Rocky Solomon Johnson, would have never thought this day would come, which is why I'm very humbled to have a seat at the table that has decades of history and family legacy for me, a table that my family helped to build. Being on the TKO board of directors and taking full ownership of my name, The Rock, is not only unprecedented, but incredibly inspiring as my crazy life is coming full circle. At my core, I'm a builder who builds for and serves the people, and TKO CEO Ari Emanuel is building something truly game-changing. I'm very motivated to help continue to globally expand our TKO, WWE, and UFC businesses as the worldwide leaders in sports and entertainment, while proudly representing so many phenomenal athletes and performers who show up every day putting in the hard work with their own two hands to make their dreams come true and deliver for our audiences. I've been there, I'm still there, and this is for them." Vince McMahon, who was the longtime owner of WWE and is the current executive chairman of the board of TKO, commented on the move as well, saying, "Very few people on the planet understand the convergence of sports, entertainment, media, and business like Rock. We are proud to have him join the TKO board to help take our company to new heights." WWE legend and head of creative Triple H welcomed The Rock to the board of directors in a post on X. The Rock originally signed with the WWE in 1996, and after a shaky start under the nickname Rocky Maivia, he eventually transformed his attitude and character, becoming The Rock. With that, he went on to become an 8-time WWE champion, 2-time WCW champion, 5-time WWE tag team champion, 2-time intercontinental champion, and 1-time Royal Rumble winner. The Rock left the WWE in 2004 to embark on a Hollywood acting career, and he has gone on to become one of the most recognizable and successful actors in the world. By joining the TKO board of directors, The Rock brings not only his pro wrestling experience to the table, but also a knowledge of how to cross over and enjoy success in other realms, such as business as well. The Rock, who is now 51 years old, has made sporadic appearances for WWE over the past two decades, with the most recent one occurring on an episode of Raw earlier this month. At the end of the appearance, The Rock mentioned the head of the table, which is one of the nicknames of his cousin and reigning undisputed WWE Universal Champion Roman Reigns. That has led to rumors and speculation of a Rock versus Reigns dream match potentially taking place at WrestleMania 40 in April, although that has not been confirmed. However, with The Rock being part of TKO's board of directors, it presumably opens the door for him to work more closely with the WWE moving forward, including potential appearances and even matches. So very exciting stuff. And believe it or not, We have more WWE to talk about. This is not something we talk about often on the show. Some of you might not consider it a sport, but I consider this big news. WWE announced on Tuesday that its flagship show, Monday Night Raw, will stream exclusively on Netflix starting in January 2025. The Netflix agreement brings an end to a long-standing partnership between Raw and NBC Universal, as Raw aired on USA Network from 1993 to 2000 and again from 2005 to the present day, although USA Network will be the new home to SmackDown starting in October. The 10-year deal is valued at more than $5 billion, according to a person familiar with the matter, reported Alex Sherman and Jacob Pramuk of CNBC.com. WWE bills Raw as the longest-running weekly episodic television show of all time, but by virtue of the deal with Netflix, Raw is moving from linear TV to streaming for the first time in its 31-year history. Raw is the final domino to fall for WWE in terms of new rights deals for its three main weekly shows. WWE previously struck a deal to make SmackDown from Fox to USA Network, and it also reached an agreement to move NXT from USA to the CW. That means that WWE will have a weekly show on broadcast television, cable television, and streaming beginning in 2025. Very smart to diversify on that front on their part. The Netflix deal continues an unprecedented few months of business for WWE, which officially merged with UFC to form TKO Group Holdings in September. Yes, this is absolutely massive. TKO president and COO Mark Shapiro also commented on the Netflix move, saying, "This deal is transformative. It marries the can't-miss WWE product with Netflix's extraordinary global reach and locks in significant and predictable economics for many years. Our partnership fundamentally alters and strengthens the media landscape, dramatically expands the reach of WWE, and brings weekly live appointment viewing to Netflix. The introduction of Raw in 1993 was groundbreaking, and it has continued to grow for more than 30 years since then, becoming a weekly staple in the world of pro wrestling and television as a whole. By joining Netflix, WWE is following in the footsteps of many major professional sports leagues, including the NFL. The NFL notably moved Sunday Ticket to YouTube TV this season, plus its Thursday night football games air exclusively on Amazon Prime Video, and one playoff game was exclusive to the Peacock streaming service this season. WWE already has a streaming presence as its monthly premium live event stream on Peacock, plus its entire video library exists on Peacock as well." So that is some big news. Speaking of big news, we are now going to transition to the NBA. This is certainly big news. The Charlotte Hornets and Terry Rozier agreed to a four-year, $97 million extension ahead of the 2021-22 season that was supposed to keep him in Charlotte through the 2025-26 campaign. So much for that. According to Woj of ESPN, Charlotte traded the guard to the Miami Heat on Tuesday for Kyle Lowry and a 2027 first-round pick, according to Woj. Woj reported the Hornets, quote, have no immediate plans to work on a buyout with Lowry and will look to move him in a future trade. It was also noted that the Hornets are not done dealing yet and plan to continue accumulating future assets before the deadline, which is on February 8th. In October 2022, Shams Charania reported that the Los Angeles Lakers were interested in Rozier as they looked at a potential Russell Westbrook trade after missing the playoffs and play-in tournament in 2021-22 and getting off to a slow start in 2022-23. Both guards stayed put at the time, although the Lakers ended up trading Westbrook in a move that brought them D'Angelo Russell, among others. Rozier wasn't always in Charlotte. The Boston Celtics selected him with a first-round pick in the 2015 NBA draft. He played his first four seasons in Boston before the Hornets acquired him as part of the sign-and-trade deal that sent Kemba Walker to the Celtics ahead of the 2019-20 season. Rozier was more of a secondary player in Boston, but established himself as a go-to scorer and a main guy in Charlotte. He posted 18 points a game in 2019-20, 20.4 in 2020-21, and 19.3 in 2021-22. He also tallied 4.5 assists, 4.5 rebounds, and almost 1.5 steals a night, while shooting 37.4% from three in 2021-22. This year, what is he averaging this year? This year, he's averaging 21.1 points, 5.1 assists, 4.1 rebounds, and 1.2 steals. He's seemingly in the middle of his prime at 29 years old, making this a noteworthy addition for the Miami Heat. While he isn't someone who is going to carry a team to a championship, you know, on his shoulders necessarily, the guard is a valuable scorer who can hit from the outside, facilitate as a passer, create off the dribble, and take advantage of the space that figures to come with playing alongside someone like Jimmy Butler. If Scary Terry can do that, this will be an important trade for Miami as it looks to solidify itself in the Eastern Conference. The Heat are currently 24-19, which is good enough for sixth in the East. Definitely a playoff team and possible title contender, no doubt about that. Speaking of a potential playoff team and title contender, the Los Angeles Lakers have reportedly had internal discussions about making a play for a legitimate superstar down the line. According to Dave McManaman of ESPN, the Lakers have talked about potentially packaging three draft picks as well as players in exchange for an all-star such as Cleveland Cavaliers guard Donovan Mitchell or Atlanta Hawks guard Trae Young. They would have to wait until June's NBA draft for such a scenario, though this could not happen before the end of this season, as that's when they'll have three first-rounders available for a trade. As for this season, the Lakers have been most frequently linked to Trae Young's backcourt running mate DeJounte Murray in recent days. The team entered this season with high expectations after reaching the Western Conference Finals last season, but they're only in ninth place in the West with a record of 22-22. There has been no clear indication that the Cavs or Hawks intend to trade their star players either, and recent reports suggest that they don't want to. The Athletic reported last week that the Cavs are, quote, planning to ride out this season with Mitchell, while ESPN's Zach Lowe reported last week that the Hawks view trading Young as unpalatable. The Cavs traded a barrage of draft picks and players to the Utah Jazz for Mitchell before last season, and he's under contract through at least the 2024-25 season. He's 27 years old. He's a four-time All-Star who averaged a career-high 28.3 points a game during his first year in Cleveland, and he's averaging 27.8 points, 6.1 assists, 5.4 rebounds, and 2 steals a game this season, so no reason for them to trade him. Trae Young is a two-time All-Star. He's enjoying another strong season, averaging 27 points, 11 assists, 3 rebounds, and 1.5 steals a game. We got more on the Lakers to talk about. The future of LeBron James is fairly uncertain at the moment. With the Los Angeles Lakers continuing to struggle, LeBron James' future in purple and gold has become one of the hottest topics in the NBA, as he holds a $51.4 million player option for the 2024-25 season, and he could opt to move on this summer. However, the Lakers, quote, have not preemptively spoken to James' representatives about the star's future plans, according to the aforementioned Dave McManaman of ESPN. LeBron's future in Los Angeles has been a hot topic since ESPN's Brian Windhorst reported on his Hoop Collective podcast that he expected the four-time NBA champion to continue playing next season, but that he wasn't sure if it would be with the Lakers. Saying, quote, I don't know what's going to happen with LeBron in 2025, Windhorst said. I feel like LeBron's going to play next year, but I don't know if it's going to be for the Lakers. Probably, but he's got an opt-out. There's reasons to have discussions about this. James has spent the last six seasons of his career in Los Angeles, and while the Lakers won a championship in 2020, the team has been mostly uncompetitive since as they struggled to put pieces around LeBron James and Anthony Davis due to salary cap issues. Austin Reeves has turned into a solid player for the franchise, but D'Angelo Russell's fit has been questionable for sure, even though he's been balling out recently, and the purple and gold lack a true third option to help get them over the hump, hence wanting to trade for someone like DeJounte Murray, Donovan Mitchell, Trae Young, someone along those lines. At 39 years old, LeBron's career is definitely winding down, and if he wants to win another championship, it is worth wondering whether he believes he can accomplish that goal with the Lakers. As mentioned, the Lakers are currently 22-22, and they appear. I mean, they could contend. I mean, you never know. I'm a big Laker fan. The Lakers this time last year looked worse than they do now, and they ended up making the Western Conference Finals. So when you have LeBron James and Anthony Davis, you just need to make the playoffs or play in tournament and have both of those guys healthy, and then who knows what will happen. So it's also worth mentioning that LeBron James wants to play with his son. So I personally don't believe that Bronny James would get drafted by an NBA team if he wasn't the son of LeBron James, but that's a whole other conversation. We'll just have to see what happens. We got some more basketball to talk about. USA Basketball revealed the 41 players in its potential selection pool for the 2024 Summer Olympics roster on Tuesday, with several usual suspects highlighting the roster, including LeBron James, Stephen Curry, and Kevin Durant. So let's see who else is on the list. So the team finalists are Bam Adebayo of the Heat, Jared Allen of the Cavs, Paolo Banchero of the Magic, Desmond Bain, Grizzlies, Scottie Barnes, Raptors, Devin Booker. Scottie Barnes is American, huh? Devin Booker, Suns, Mikal Bridges, Nets, Jaylen Brown, Celtics, Jalen Brunson, Knicks, Jimmy Butler, Heat, Alex Caruso, Bulls, Steph Curry, Warriors, Anthony Davis, Lakers, Kevin Durant, Suns, Anthony Edwards, Timberwolves, Joel Embiid, Sixers, De'Aaron Fox, Kings, Paul George, Clippers, Aaron Gordon, Nuggets, Tyrese Halliburton, Pacers, James Harden, Clippers, Josh Hart, Knicks, Tyler Hero, Heat, Drew Holiday, Celtics, Chet Holmgren, Thunder, Brandon Ingram, Pelicans, Kyrie Irving, Mavericks, Jaren Jackson Jr., Grizzlies, LeBron James, Lakers, Cam Johnson, Nets. Yeah, he's on the Nets. Walker Kessler, Jazz, Kawhi Leonard, Clippers, Damian Lillard, Bucks, Donovan Mitchell, Cavs, Chris Paul, Warriors, Bobby Portis, Bucks, Austin Reeves, Lakers, Duncan Robinson, Heat, Jason Tatum, Celtics, Derek White, Celtics, and Trae Young, Hawks. Defending NBA MVP Joel Embiid who committed to USA Basketball in October, is another virtual lock to make the final 12-man roster. Trying to pick only 12 players out of that impressive pool of options is no small feat, but a few players seem like safe bets if they are healthy. Having at least two reliable centers makes sense, and both Anthony Davis and Bam Adebayo are excellent options behind Embiid. Will Team USA carry three centers on a 12-man roster, though? That's going to be one of the tough decisions. Curry will undoubtedly be brought aboard at one of the guard spots, and LeBron and KD will handle two of the roster spots on the wing. It will get extremely competitive on the roster after that. We'll start at wing, where players like Devin Booker, Jalen Brown, Jimmy Butler, Anthony Edwards, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, Jason Tatum, and maybe even Scottie Barnes should all be in serious consideration. At guard, Jalen Brunson, De'Aaron Fox, Tyrese Halliburton, James Harden, Kyrie Irving, Damian Lillard, Donovan Mitchell, and Trae Young warrant possible selection. So here's what my roster would look like. At center, I would have Joel Embiid and Anthony Davis. Wings, I would take LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Jason Tatum, Anthony Edwards, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, and Jimmy Butler. And point guard, Steph Curry, Damian Lillard, and Tyrese Halliburton. I mean, that is a ridiculous potential roster. It's possible with that much scoring and playmaking that adding a player who can specialize in defense, it might be a bit more necessary. Or the team could go with one less point guard since players like LeBron and Jimmy Butler can run the offense as well. And it's possible the team will enter, will either go with three true centers or two centers and a third player who can handle the position in smaller lineups. So we'll just have to see what Team USA decides. Speaking of decisions, the 2024 Major League Baseball Hall of Fame class has been announced. Adrian Beltre, Joe Mauer, and Todd Helton were elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame as part of the class of 2024. The results were announced Tuesday by MLB Network with at least 75% of votes needed for players to receive an induction. Beltre, Mauer, and Helton will join three-time Manager of the Year Jim Leyland, who was elected in December through the Contemporary Baseball Area Committee with 93.8% of the vote. There were 26 candidates on this year's ballot with 12 newcomers and 14 holdovers. Beltre was considered a shoe-in in his first year on the ballot as he had appeared on 99% of public ballots. Mauer was also a popular first-year candidate with a public ballot of 83.2%. Beltre played a total of 21 Major League seasons with the Los Angeles Dodgers, Seattle Mariners, Boston Red Sox, and Texas Rangers. He won 5 Gold Gloves for his exemplary performance at third base. He also won 4 Silver Slugger Awards and earned 4 selections to the All-Star Game. At the time of his retirement in 2008, he was the only third baseman in the history of the MLB with over 3,000 career hits and 400 home runs. His number 29 was retired by the Rangers in 2019. Mauer spent his entire 15-year career with the Minnesota Twins and was one of the team's most beloved players. He took home the American League MVP award in 2009 and won 3 American League batting titles. He earned 6 All-Star selections, 5 Silver Slugger awards, and 3 Gold Glove awards during his time as a catcher before switching to first base late in his career. The Twins retired his number 7 in 2019 as well. Helton was in his 6th year on the ballot, but he barely fell short last year with 72.2% of the vote, so it was expected that he would be able to break through this year. He spent his entire 17-year career with the Colorado Rockies, winning an MLB batting title in 2000. The 5-time All-Star finished his career with 2,519 hits, 369 home runs, and a .316 career batting average. Billy Wagner, Gary Sheffield, Andrew Jones, and Carlos Beltran were among the repeat players on the ballot who once again failed to meet the 75% threshold for induction. Sheffield was in his final year on the ballot. It was Wagner's 9th year on the ballot, so next year will be his last. The longtime closer was a 7-time All-Star and ranks 6th in MLB history with 422 career saves in his 16 Major League seasons with the Houston Astros, New York Mets, Philadelphia Phillies, Atlanta Braves, and Boston Red Sox. Of course, Alex Rodriguez remains the biggest snub in his 3rd year on the ballot thanks to his connection to performance-enhancing drugs, which have kept Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens out of the Hall of Fame during their 10 years on the ballot. Rodriguez, who has 3 MVP awards and ranks 5th in MLB history with 696 home runs, received only 34.8% of the vote, down from 35.7% last year. The class of 2024 will officially be inducted into the Hall of Fame during a ceremony at Cooperstown on July 21st. So, A-Rod is very controversial. I'm not going to get into all that, but Billy Wagner should be a Hall of Famer. No doubt about that. We got more baseball to talk about, believe it or not. Free agent first baseman Rhys Hoskins has agreed to a 2-year contract worth $34 million with the Milwaukee Brewers, per the New York Post. It also includes a player opt-out after this upcoming season. Hoskins has played all 6 of his MLB seasons with the Philadelphia Phillies from 2017 to 2022. He missed the entire 2023 season with a torn ACL suffered while attempting to field a ground ball during a spring training game against the Detroit Tigers on March 23rd. Hoskins' big power has been beneficial to the Phillies over the course of his career. The 30-year-old has posted an .846 OPS with 148 home runs and 405 RBIs since debuting in 2017. During the Phillies' 2022 National League winning season, he smacked 30 home runs alongside 79 RBIs and a 794 OPS. He saved his best work for the National League Championship Series, in which he put up 4 home runs and 7 RBIs in a five-game series win over the San Diego Padres. Before the 2023 season, Hoskins signed a one-year, $12 million contract to avoid salary arbitration. This offseason marked the first time that he was eligible for free agency. So in my opinion, this is a huge pickup for the Brewers, absolutely huge, simply because they have elite pitching and very, very bad offense. So this is absolutely massive for them. Let's talk about some hockey, and this is I believe, a serious subject. The Philadelphia Flyers will be without goalie Carter Hart for the immediate future. Quote, Carter Hart has requested and been granted an indefinite leave of absence, citing personal reasons. General Manager Daniel Breyer said in a statement, the club will have no further comment at this time. Philadelphia recalled goalie Cal Peterson, Kings legend, from Lehigh Valley of the American Hockey League on Tuesday per NHL.com. Hart and Samuel Ersson have started the majority of the games in net for the Flyers this season. This is Hart's sixth season with the team. He last played during a January 20th loss to the Colorado Avalanche, where he allowed 5 goals on 15 shots before he was pulled for Ersson. So any NHL goalie that allows 5 goals on 15 shots is definitely not on his game, to say the least. It was a poor performance in what has otherwise been an impressive season for the 25-year-old. He's averaging 2.8 goals allowed per game with a .906 save percentage, which matches his career average. The Flyers have also played well and are in second place in the Metropolitan Division with 56 points and a record of 25-16-6. So hopefully whatever is going on in Carter Hart's life, you know, the personal reasons, personal struggles, hopefully that all gets figured out. And, you know, I wish him the best. We got some major, major, major football news to talk about now. This is absolutely breaking news. Jim Harbaugh will be the next coach of the Los Angeles Chargers. ESPN's Adam Schefter reported the deal is for 5 years. Quote, Jim Harbaugh is football personified, and I can think of no one better to lead the Chargers forward, Chargers owner Dean Spanos said in the team statement. The son of a coach, brother of a coach, and father of a coach who himself was coached by names like Shem Beckler and Ditka for the past 2 decades, Jim has led hundreds of men to success everywhere he's been as their coach. And today, Jim Harbaugh returns to the Chargers, this time as our coach. Who has it better than us? Los Angeles certainly didn't think small with his hiring, as Harbaugh is one of the biggest names in the entire sport with a long track record of success. He is coming off the national championship with Michigan, which was the culmination of a 9-year tenure that also featured 3 Big Ten championships. He's also leaving the Big Ten powerhouse ahead of a potential NCAA sanctions, as Michigan is currently under investigation on multiple fronts for recruiting violations and a sign-stealing scandal. The head coach was suspended multiple times during the 2023 season. Harbaugh won't have to worry about any of those sanctions as he returns to the NFL, where he found success before leading the Wolverines. He led the San Francisco 49ers to 4 seasons from 2011 to 2014 and directed them to 3 straight NFC Championship games and a Super Bowl appearance. He posted a 44-19-1 overall record during his first stint as an NFL head coach. The Chargers would love a run like that, especially after such a disappointing season in 2023. The position was made available because of the Chargers fired Brandon Staley in December following a 63-21 blowout loss to the Las Vegas Raiders that dropped their record to 5-9. They also lost their final 3 games under interim head coach Jiff Smith, so there's plenty of work to be done in 2024 and beyond. Staley seemed to be coaching on the hot seat for much of the season after the 2022 season ended in stunning fashion. Los Angeles had a good season, made the playoffs, but blew a 27-0 lead in the wildcard round to the Jacksonville Jaguars. That dialed up the pressure quite a bit for the 2023 season, but 5 of the team's first 6 losses came by 3 points or less. Absolutely brutal. By then, the writing was on the wall for Staley and the team that had no shortage of star power in Justin Herbert, Austin Eckler, Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, Joey Bosa, Derwin James, and Khalil Mack. I mean, that is a loaded, loaded team. While the Chargers dealt with a number of injuries, including to quarterback Justin Herbert, they fell well short of expectations given that roster on the way to a 5-12 record. Things didn't look so great entering the offseason either, as ESPN noted that former general manager Tom Telesco, who was fired at the same time as Staley, pushed many of the team's salary cap concerns into 2024 by restructuring the contracts of Allen, Williams, Bosa, and Mack. This time, the Chargers are $27.5 million over the salary cap, according to ESPN's roster management system. At 5-12, with a roster laden with aging stars, this team no longer appears to be as close to contention as it seemed to be a season ago, putting the future of some of this team's best players in question. Los Angeles' last playoff win came in the 2018 season, and the salary cap situation will only make it more complicated. Let us now transition to the NBA to close out this episode of the one and only Sean Sports Podcast. The Milwaukee Bucks are hiring longtime NBA head coach Doc Rivers, according to TNT Sports, Chris Haynes of TNT Sports. Shams Charania of The Athletic reported that the contract is in the range of $40 million and will run through the 2026-27 season. The move did not come as a surprise when Adrian Griffin was fired abruptly after a 30-13 start to the season. Rivers' name very quickly surfaced as a potential replacement. Rivers had also served as an informal consultant to Griffin at points during the season per Charania, so it wasn't a stretch for the team to simply appoint him as the new head coach. The 62-year-old is an NBA lifer. He went from a 13-year NBA career that saw him average 11 points and 6 assists per game in the 1980s and 1990s to a lengthy career in coaching. He had stops with the Orlando Magic 1999 to 2004, Boston Celtics 2004 to 2013, Los Angeles Clippers 2014 to 2020, and Philadelphia 76ers 2020 to 2023, going 1,097 and 763 with 19 playoff appearances, 2 NBA Finals appearances, and 1 NBA championship with the Boston Celtics in 2008. His success speaks for itself, though in recent years, Rivers has struggled to lead his team on deep playoff runs. Neither his Clippers nor Sixers got past the second round of the playoffs, despite having very talented teams. I mean, he had Clippers teams that had guys like Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, J.J. Redick. Sixers teams that had guys like Joel Embiid, James Harden, Tyrese Maxey, Tobias Harris. I mean, those are loaded teams. Rivers will be tasked with maximizing the upside of a talented Bucks team that features superstars in Giannis Antetokounmpo and Damian Lillard, alongside fringe all-stars like Chris Middleton and Brook Lopez. That roster had reportedly soured on Griffin. According to Chris Mannix of Sports Illustrated, quote, there have been steady rumblings for weeks in NBA circles that several Bucks veterans, including Giannis, had lost faith in Griffin. What appeared to be a smart hire last spring just never worked out. According to Haynes, players on the team, quote, privately complained about their roles, touches, chemistry, and constantly questioned the schemes on both sides of the ball. Woj of ESPN added that Bucks general manager John Horst believes Griffin will develop into a very good NBA head coach, but lost confidence that he could do it within the timeline of the Bucks' immediate championship window, sources said. Rivers has worked with star-studded teams, but again, that deep playoff success has not really been there in recent years for him. So ladies and gentlemen, this is all we have for this episode of the Sean Sports Talk Podcast. It's been a loaded one, I believe. This was number 429. Thank you guys so much for listening. I love you guys. I'll see you guys in the next one. Peace.